That's right. We are back once again, and it is great to be back. It's great to be back with you. My life is filled with so much mind-numbing boredom at this point because it's like being under house arrest. I'm under like house arrest for what seems like forever now. So my days are filled with a lot of mind-numbing boredom. I always look forward to sitting down, having the discussions with you, but I'm really excited to sit down. I'm really excited to have something to do. Sit down and have these discussions with you. 158th installment of the show. We just keep going. We just keep going strong. I always like to start off by reminding everybody that the show, we don't have ads. I don't have any extra content for you. You get this show, the Friday installment where I sit down with Sven Longshanks for the Daily Nationalist. I'm temporarily doing a midweek extra show, by the way. Look for that. It's nothing special. But I am doing that. But there is no extra content. So there's no paywall. There's nothing extra you pay for. It's just voluntary support. If you get something out of the show, and I hope you do, like I say, it's not like I expect you to send a whole bunch. I've said this before. I've never once in the history of this thing sat there and looked at me like, that's all they sent. Trust me. If everybody sent a little, it adds up to a lot. It is really appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, you can find that information at the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albion. I got snail mail, Bitcoin, Monero. Got the email address down there. You can drop your notes. If you've got another kind of cryptocurrency, please drop me an email for that. I'll get you an address for that as well. And with that having been said, let's jump into listener supporter mailbag. I only got one to read this week. Mr. TGPT, looking forward to your shows for years to come. Well, if God so wills it, then it shall be. I did go a quick cancer update, and I'm going to get a little more into that here. Well, I'll get into that here in a second. But quick cancer update. I did go to the doctor. I got the drain. The drain is out. The Boda bag of disgustingness is off. That's what I was calling it because I had the drain in there, you know, and I had to carry this thing around. I called it the Boda bag. So if you know what a Boda bag is, because it was disgusting, this drain thing. I finally got the drain out. Yes. Yes. It's so much easier now. I don't have to hang this thing around my neck with a boot lace so I can take a shower. You know, I could actually try to kind of put my pants on, sweatpants or my shorts or whatever I'm wearing on. Yeah. It's like, of course, I can't bend my leg yet. I did get that out, and they took some of the stitches out. I'm still not allowed to even attempt to bend my leg yet, so I'm still crippled. I still can't get around. But as far as pathology reports and stuff, they say they've all looked good. This is a miracle. Honestly, and honestly, the doctors can't believe it. I've got this situation where they're just kind of like, well, we're going to run more tests on you. You know, and the doctor's like, normally we'd be like, well, once we get you over all of this, because I do have this nasty, nasty infection thing going on my leg right now. I got this layer of corpse skin. It is. It's like I know now what it would be like to stumble across a body that's been decomposing for a month, because I've got this layer of like corpse skin that died and it's slowly going away, and the others that, but it's disgusting. I won't get into that part too much. But anyway, doctor's like, normally you get over this part right here and we'd be like, okay, congratulations. But they said your tumor was so bad that we can't believe you're not covered up with this. So they're going to run more tests because right now everything is coming back golden. I consider it a blessing and miracle. I'm going to get into a little bit. I've been wanting to discuss a little bit. As you know, if you are new around here, so you may not know. So I remind everybody every week, we got a Christian-specific segment, you know, the sermon, if you would. That's later on in the show. I aim for the halfway mark. It's usually not the halfway mark. It's usually either a little early, a little later. It's whatever. This week, you really want to tune in. I'm going to get into, I've been wanting to discuss some of the things as far as I've learned going through this experience, you know, just changed my perspective and shifted. And I'm still going through it. It's not like, well, I've wrapped that up. I figured that out. That's not the case. But I've been shifting and changing my perspective and the way I look at things and the way I look at life. You know, this is a big deal. This is a big experience to go through, a big trial, a big, I don't know, it's a big event to go through. And it really does shift and change understanding. I'm still going through that, of course. And I'm going to get into, I wanted to get into that, but my Christian faith is such a central part of who I am that I knew that anytime I got into that, it would turn into, at some point, there would be parts that would be preachy. Okay. Not all of it, but there's going to be parts that are going to be preachy. So I went ahead and decided, I made the decision to go ahead and discuss that in the Christian specific segment. So, I mean, all of y'all that have been with me through this journey so far as we continue, maybe if you don't always listen to the Christian, go ahead and listen to it this week, because we are going to get, I am going to get into discussing some of the, you know, really the way it's changed my perspective and the way I view things. And the idea with sharing that is that, you know, maybe you can change your perspective and the way you view things and get some clarity in your life without going through a cancer diagnosis. Okay. You know, I mean, just if you can learn it without having to go through it, all the better. You know, and I don't want to hoard the lessons I've learned. Y'all been supportive. Y'all been just a real blessing for me, and I hope God will bless you. I really mean that. I'm not some fake-ass TV preaching guy. I pray they got that. That's not what I'm saying. I say that with the most humility in my heart, that I hope God will bless you, because you have been a blessing for me, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Your notes of support, the emails, and your own stories that some of you have gone through. It does mean a lot. So anyway, I'm going to get into that, and I'm, like I said, I'm saving it for the Christian specific segment, so that when I do inevitably get preachy in some parts, you're not like, I don't want to hear about all this heaven and hell stuff there, GPD. You can't say that. You can't say that, because it's in the Christian specific segment. Lots of stuff has happened, hasn't it? You have to understand, I record these shows early, okay? I record this show, generally Saturday is recording day. Show goes up on Tuesday. Y'all be tuning in on Tuesday being like, how come GPD hadn't talking about this? It's the big news. Well, because it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening when I recorded the show. Big stuff. Big stuff happening. The big thing is this whole Russian-Ukraine thing. Wow, you know, what a great time for Dr. Johnson to be on vacation. Cancel the honeymoon. You got to get back here and talk about this. No. Life goes on. Some things are more important than this stuff. It's not going to quit existing. But no, it's a big happening, you know. And to have watched the way and to follow these events, especially now, because I have so much free time on my hand, to the point that, like, I'm afraid I'm going kind of crazy. I'm afraid I'm going kind of nuts, because I'm stuck in the house all the time. I can't do anything. I was worried about it last night. You know, I was thinking about doing the show today. I'm looking forward to doing it. I always look forward to doing the show. As I said before, though, I really look forward to it now, because it's like, yes, something to do. And I'm really concerned. I thought, you know, I'm losing my edge. I'm losing my edge, because I do. I don't feel as mentally sharp, because I can't do, I'm not doing physical work. I'm not outside doing things. I'm not figuring problems out that are unrelated to the world. Like, figure out why something isn't working or how to fix something. And I do. I feel like it's mentally, I don't know, making me more mentally dull. I worry about these things. It can't be helped. I mean, I literally can't do anything right now. But anyway, back to the point. Sorry, I got off on a tangent there. So that again is, no, you were always like that, Dan. You're probably right. Somebody's following this, especially so now, because I am basically under house arrest. What amounts to house arrest, self-imposed house arrest. You know, follow this and to see the way in which Russia has been diplomatically, before all of this happened, diplomatically bending over backwards, begging for a diplomatic solution, pleading, you know, working with all of these different quote unquote leaders. They publicly released what it is they want. They want an agreement that Ukraine won't be in NATO. They want NATO to go back to being their, you know, off of their borders. Get up out of my face. Get back over your property line. Respect my space, bro. We'll get along just fine. Very reasonable security demands. And over, they're rebuffed. That's just a fact. I'm not being a Russian shill. I'm not being a Russian apologist. It's just fact. You just watch you just read and read news from sources not the U.S. mainstream media. And they have. They've diplomatically been over backwards. I don't know how many trips, how many talks poor Lavrov has had to go through. The worst of which was when Britain insulted him by sending Liz Truss over there, who made an idiot out of herself. And this is what they have to offer. Get them to go along with the Minsk Accords. This will fix everything. Go with the Minsk Accords. We could settle this problem in eastern Ukraine. Don't do it. Won't do it. Ukraine won't do it. U.S. won't have Ukraine do it. Nobody. Nobody. Nope. Russia, we got to do this. We've got these security. And then what? Ukraine comes out and the president of Ukraine comes out and says, oh, well, we just might even get nuclear weapons. Like, that's going to turn out well, making a statement like that. Now, after having to endure weeks and weeks of the U.S. going, the Russians are coming, the Russians are invading. You know, is it the point? It's like, you know, y'all shut up. Y'all shut up. Now, I did wonder when they did officially recognize the Donbass as independent region, and they sent peacekeepers in. I was thinking to myself, I thought, well, okay, wait a minute. What's to keep Ukraine? How is that going to make Ukraine stop shelling? You know, it's just like, don't shell like a dude, you know? I mean, how are you going to stop? You got to do something. You have to push those positions back. Well, now we got the answer. Now we got the answer. This is going to blow up all their military stuff. There's a pretty straightforward answer. One thing's made this real painful, is, and I'm sure y'all can identify with this, is having followed these events as they've unfolded and you know, for a long time, not just like right now, oh, all of a sudden it's happening, trying to catch up. I mean, we've watched this unfold over years. Honestly, since the U.S. pulled the coup in 2014, it's so frustrating to have to sit here and see these news stories now like this just came out of nowhere. And I guess for the average brain-dead normie, you know, it did. It just came out of nowhere. We woke up one day and Russia's doing an invasion. Every one of these news stories, I wish every news story could be prefaced with, in 2014, the U.S. State Department sponsored a coup and overthrew the duly elected government of Ukraine. I wish every news story had to start with that. If we had honest media, it would start with that. But we don't. No need to beat that dead horse again. We don't have an honest. We don't have a free press. We have a press that walks in lockstep with the agenda, with the narrative. So never gets mentioned. 2014, they overthrew the duly elected government in Ukraine. Now, having followed all this for so long and see these events unfold and now watch the media run around with all of this gibberish. I've talked about this before, but all of this gibberish. They've doubled down on the gibberish, of course, because they can't come out and say, well, this is a result of the U.S. overthrowing the duly elected government of Ukraine. And refusing to work with Russia on these very reasonable security demands that they have. Instead, it's come to this. I can't do that. No, so we get this gibberish, and it's more of the same. Vladimir Putin wants to rebuild the Soviet Union. Vladimir Putin is ass hurt because the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. Of course, my favorite one, and I've mentioned this one, I believe, before on the show. My favorite one is they went to an expert. I was reading an article, and they went to one of these experts. And according to the expert, the reason Putin's doing this is because he's a bully. He's a junior high bully. If you were bullied in junior high, like, this isn't about projection from the expert. We know how the expert's junior high life was. It's still affecting him to this day. But if you were ever bullied in junior high, Vladimir Putin is the bully. That's all you need to know about this. I'm pretty sure you don't start blowing shit up because, I don't know, you're a junior high bully, but that is the level of analysis that the average American gets. I don't know how people go through, you know, we have good content here. I'm going to toot our own horn here for a minute. You know, we're Radio Albion. You know, I think we have the best content that we've ever put out. You know, I mean, yes, I include myself in that, but Sven Longshanks, I mean, Dr. Johnson. We have really good stuff. You know, and if you listen to this stuff, you got a better understanding without having to read through all the articles and understand. You don't have to, spend years studying Russia like Dr. Johnson has. You can get the understanding, at least get a better grasp of it. But the average person out there is listening to the mainstream media, whichever flavor they like, whether it's MSNBC or Fox News, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they get more or less the same narrative. Vladimir Putin bad. Look at the Republicans. Republicans are running around. They're not criticizing, this policy. No, they're saying Biden isn't doing enough to start World War III with Russia. He needs to be even tougher. He needs to threaten to nuke them or some retarded shit. Like, nobody else really wants that. Here's a question. How are all those troops running around? See, all these troops. These troops are running around doing, troop things, shooting and fighting as a unit. And they're not wearing their masks. I don't even understand how it's possible they should all be dropping dead of the coronavirus. How do you have any kind of military action? How do you have any kind of war when there's a global deadly pandemic happening and everybody's dropping dead from the coronavirus? You can't be having a war like that. How is this even possible? Trudeau is still got martial law going in Canada and calling his own citizens domestic terrorists and crushing them, throwing them in jail for opposing the government's viewpoint, having a different viewpoint than slavishly obeying the government. Had the nerve to come out and said he's sending, a massive 500 Canadians over to Poland or some shit. It's some other kind. It wasn't Poland. Anyway, because this shows that Canada stands against authoritarianism. Authoritarianism. We stand with freedom and the democracy. Like, dude, we're not supposed to remember what you did last week. Wait, are we not supposed to remember that you are still sitting there holding on to martial law in the country? You're seizing people's bank accounts. You're tracking people down who didn't even go to the protest because they sent money in support of the protest. And that's the same as supporting terrorism. And you got the nerve. I said this on the Friday show with Sven Longshanks. One great thing about this is the mask is off now. I mean, they can stand up there and say, the democracy and our freedom and our human rights, all they want to. But the mask is off. If somebody doesn't see now that the mask is off, that's their fault. That's their problem for being a brain dead idiot. I'm sorry. If you're so stupid, if you're so in denial of reality at this point that you're still sitting there lapping it up. My freedom. Yeah. My democracy and my democracy and my elections. And yeah, we got the freedoms after what has happened in Canada. Martial law. Crushing people and after what happened in the U.S. That's Canada. After what happened on January 6th, the way they're still trying to track people down for going to a protest. Now people are being arrested that didn't even go in the Capitol, by the way, having their lives wrecked and ruined. Why? Because they hold a view that the government doesn't like. If you're still lapping up my freedom and my democracy, I don't know what to tell you. You're stupid. And I don't use that term lightly, but you're an idiot. Anybody who's still lapping that up is a moron at this point. You're probably a lost cause. You're just probably a lost cause. You should probably just go join the U.S. military and go fight and die for our freedoms and our democracy then, if you're that stupid. I'm going to tell you, it's for, truth seekers, political dissidents, truth seekers. Such as ourselves. I mean, we've always, we put our necks out. We've been putting our necks out here for years, and we've suffered the consequences for that. And you can't help but to think about the fact that as this continues to gin up and this hostility continues to gin up, I mean, our necks are getting further and further out there because we're speaking the truth. If this escalates to really a shooting conflict, this is bad. I mean, this we're drawing closer to, it's getting more and more confrontational. And the morons running it seem to think that they can keep it from going over that line. But I think they're morons, and I question their ability to do that. As these hostilities increase, And the demonization of anybody that points out the truth as Russian shills. And, you know, we've been accused of people, been anybody pointing these things out has been accused of being what? Russian bots. You're Russian bots. You're probably on the payroll of the Russians, Moscow. Putin's writing you a check. Putin's never wrote me a check. I wish he would. I wish Putin would send me a check. Send me some Bitcoin. You know, send me some love, lad, because I'm sticking my neck out here. All of us are. As this becomes a twisting into, oh, you're adding, you know, Russia is now the enemy. Oh, you people who are speaking the truth, you're giving aid and comfort to, quote unquote, the enemy. I figure a lot of truth tellers, podcasters or whatnot out here, I'm sure a lot of them are in the back of their mind thinking the same thing I am. I mean, we've been sticking our necks out here for a long time, but the neck's getting further and further stretched. Further and further stretched with this, when they can now be, well, they're just our boys are out there fighting for the freedom and the democracy, and these people, they're Russian sympathizers. And granted, now things haven't got to that point yet, but it's closer to that point than I think the average person realizes. That's just my uneducated take on it. But those of us who are out here speaking these truths, you know, our necks are out there. You start twisting it into your Russian sympathizers. You're getting aid. You're giving aid and comfort to the enemy by speaking the truth. Got a scary thing. I'm sure that many truth tellers, whether they be writing articles or podcasters, whatever the case may be, I imagine in the back of their minds, we're all kind of starting to think the same thing. You know, we've always been in the crosshairs. The crosshairs are getting closer now. Huh. But you know what? What do you do? You do. The truth remains the truth. One of the things I found really just so much of an example, an illustration, if you would, of the stupidity, the low level of intelligence of the people running this operation. Because it's like I told you, know, these people running this massive power structure that was built up over years, generations, to build up this massive power structure. But now the people that have inherited and running it are really stupid. I do believe that. And one of the things I found to be really illustrative of that is the U.S., when all this came unwound, is running around posturing about all of it as if, you know, they didn't have the chance to head it off over and over again and refused to do so. Now they're acting shocked and offended. And as I told somebody the other day, you know, if you keep mouthing off to somebody and the guy tells you, look, if you don't shut up and get out of my face, I'm going to pop you in your mouth. And you keep getting more in his face and keep running your mouth. And then finally top it off with, you know, like Zelensky saying, we might get nuclear weapons with, yeah, I'll kick your ass. And then I'm going to go have sex with your wife. Don't be shocked when you get punched in the mouth. Yes. But one of the things that was really illustrative of the stupidity of these people, because for so long now, they keep going back and forth. China, Russia, China, Russia, China, Russia, China, Russia, China, Russia. And after having spent an equal amount of time demonizing China and antagonizing China and sailing U.S. Ships into Chinese waters and then run back and trying walking that line of, oh, Taiwan this and Taiwan that. Now they've gone back to Russia, Russia. I was reading an article the other day, and I may expand on it on the Wednesday show. I haven't decided yet. But I read this article the other day, and it was just made my head explode. They were all incensed and outraged because they went to China and were like, you can't trust them Russians. You need to side with us. You can come out and condemn Russia for what they're doing and side with the West. And then, of course, when China was like, you know, no thanks, merchant, you go away. We, you know, you've been causing problems for us for years. You know, you've been doing the same song and dance at us that you've been doing with Russia. Now you want us to side with you. They were all incensed at this. They were all mad, outraged. Well, China's going to regret this. They couldn't believe it. How dare China not side with the U.S. against Russia? It's like, why would you think they would do that? Russia's been friendly with them. They've been able to do agreements and work together. They have a traditional A traditional view of international cooperation, not the Western view. You see, the Western view has this, like, subjugation view. See, the traditional view of international relations is if you can work with this other nation and further both of your interests, then you do that. But you're not marrying them. You're not tied at the hip. You know, you have a lot of other things that are in your own interest that have nothing to do with them. And in those things, you don't worry about each other. The U.S., the Western version is, you have to agree with us on every single thing. In fact, basically, you have to be subjugated and you have to be a puppet. That is their version of international relations. That's why they hate China and Russia, because they don't do that. They're like, well, we would work with you on these things where we could further each other's interests. But no, we're not going to lay down and just be your dog and do whatever you tell us to do. That's the Western version. You know, but yeah, no, they were just incensed that China wouldn't jump up and go along. I thought, why would you even think? In what world would you have to live in that you would think you could convince China, after you've done the exact same thing to them with Taiwan as you've been doing with Russia with Ukraine? Only really, it's worse with China, because Taiwan is China. It's part of China. It's always been a part of China. Anyway. It was just breathtaking that they would actually think, that China might would side with them against Russia. It's amateur hour. Talking about how they're supposed to be subjugated, I saw the other day that, you know, Germany, occupied Germany, speaking of subjugated nations, you know, as part of our being incensed, we're going to do what the U.S. has been trying to get us to do all along. Wow, that's handy. And we're going to halt certification of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And it's like, the pipeline is going to, this is going to teach them a lesson. Well, the Russians, this is going to hurt the Russians. Like, that's the, the pipeline is irrelevant. I'll say it again. Everybody's like, Nord Stream 2. Nord Stream 2 is irrelevant. The pipeline is irrelevant. You know what's relevant? What goes through the pipeline. The gas is what's relevant. Russia's got it. Germany don't. You guys, we're not going to certify Nord Stream 2. Well, then you're not going to get anything through the pipe. Who's that going to hurt? Russia? Because I guarantee you, China's like, we can use all the gas you can send us. Don't worry. Whatever they don't buy, we'll take it. It ain't going to hurt you at all. This will teach them. One of the Russian officials, I don't remember who it was, they tweeted something like, you know, whoa, congratulations, Germany. Enjoy paying five times the amount for your gas, and probably worse, because they're doing that. They say, well, we won't. They're already facing inflation like everybody else is. And now they're going to play multiple times. Their gas reserves are low. They've got an energy crisis going on. And this is what they choose to do. Now, they're doing that under the assumption that the gas they're already receiving from Russia that transits through Ukraine is going to keep coming. You know, so the Ukrainians can keep stealing the gas. Part of Ukraine's economy is the gas they steal from Russia that goes through there to Europe. They keep assuming that Russia's going to keep sending that gas. You know, we're not going to certify Nord Stream 2. If I was Russia, Russia is trying to follow the law. They're trying to follow their agreements. Unlike the U.S. that does an agreement and then it shreds it whenever that whim suits them. Russia's trying to abide by their agreements. Now, they have gas contracts signed with Europe, signed with Germany, that they are going to fulfill. But there's this huge assumption that once those are fulfilled, they're going to sign new ones. You see, the assumption is that the gas will keep flowing through Ukraine so they can keep stealing it, and Russia will just send more so that they fulfill their contract with Germany. But once those contracts are up, Russia's under no obligation to sign new ones. They just shut that valve off. People say, wow, Russia will just cut off the gas. Well, they can't, or they won't. I mean, they could, but they won't, because they're honoring their agreements. They agreed to send this much gas to them for the money. But once that's done, yes, then they're liable to shut that valve off. I think they should. I think they probably will. Shut the valve off. Five times the amount for gas. You just won't have gas. Forget for any price if they do this. The U.S. will send liquefied natural You can't send enough. It is so expensive and so difficult to liquefy natural gas. The U.S. ain't going to ship enough liquefied natural gas to Europe to make up for what Russia can send through a pipeline. It's just not how it works. Finally, one of my other favorite things that I've seen on the U.S. media, and I torture myself by watching the mainstream media. It's just like whipping myself. One of the funny things I've seen them do is now they're trying to blame this Russia thing. They're blaming Russia for the inflation. You know, what was it, 3 years ago? The U.S. is like energy independent. We make all our own oil. And now all of a sudden it's like we've been watching gas prices along with everything else go through the roof for the past, year? And now the media is like breaking story. Gas prices are going to go up. This inflation is happening because of Russia. It's like, it wasn't happening last month. All that inflation you've been seeing, it was a figment of your imagination. Turns out it didn't exist, but it does now. And it's all Vladimir Putin's fault. Isn't that, once again, it's just so handy. These people are stupid. But they think that everybody else is stupid. I hope they're not right. They may be right. Maybe everybody else is dumb too. I don't know. But they're operating on the assumption that everybody's a moron and they're going to forget that last month prices were going through the roof too. Why is gas going through the roof? Well, what they're really saying, I hear that, and they're like, because of this Russia thing, gas prices are going to go up even higher. I'm thinking, yeah, the corporations are like, wow, hey, look, a real good excuse to go ahead and jack that price up even more. Jack the price up even more. Hot dog. Rake in those profits. Everybody else gets a little poor. Because when they jack those prices up, it just strip mines what little bit. They're getting your last few cents. Why they get wealthier. While the big corporations rake it in and get the more billions. Everybody else is just living destitute, hand to mouth. Can't get meat off the grocery shelves. Oh, but look at Wall Street. I told somebody the other day, in the U.S., that's the economy now. That's the only thing they have to point to. They used to point to other things. We've got indicators that say the middle class is thriving. They used to do that. They don't bother now. Now the economy in the U.S. equals Wall Street. Look at Wall Street. Oh, the economy is better than it's ever been. Everybody else poor. It's like they put these news stories out. It's like, oh, well, we have inflation because workers are just making so much money now. Is that real for any of you? It's right up there with the coronavirus thing. You know, there's a deadly pandemic. 6 quadrillion people have died from the coronavirus. Do you know anybody that's died from the coronavirus? You might know somebody that you heard of that, you know, I don't know, had all of these other diseases. And then you heard they died of the coronavirus. But do you personally know anybody? No. Do you personally know anybody who's just flush with cash because they're getting paid so much more money at their job now? No. It's bullshit. We have this inflation because people just have so much money. Our economy is coming back. It's so strong that we've got all this money. So we've got this transitional inflation, you see. More gibberish. Like I said on the show prior, the more gibberish the bigger the lie, the more gibberish. Why do we have all of this inflation? Well, it's because everybody's got so much money. You're all rich. Are you? Is anybody you know, the people you work with sitting around talking about, man, think about it. A year or so ago, we were all at this job bitching about how we don't barely have enough money to pay our bills. Now look at us today, man. I got me a new car. Everybody's got new cars out in the parking. Oh, that's right. We can't get new cars because there's no parts for them. But if we could get parts for them, we would all be driving new cars. We all sold our old shitty mobile homes, and now we're living in 2-story brick houses. Man, life is good. Who cares about inflation? Yet, that, at the end of the day, that's what they expect us to believe. It's nonsensical. Anyway, looking at the time, we got to get into the Christian-specific segment this week. I'm having a psychic moment here. The show is going to be long this week. I've been doing really, really good on making the show more or less fit into the hour time frame. And I can tell right now, it's not going to fit in the hour time frame this week. Oh, well, think of it as bonus extra content. So anyway, we got to wrap up on that note. Without further ado, we're not going to drag it out. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian-specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. As we get settled in this week, I've been wanting to really take the time to discuss, you know, what I've been going through on the cancer diagnosis. And I've been back and forth. I decided today was the day I was going to do it. This was going to be the day. And you wouldn't believe how long it's taken me to really get it going here, sitting down. This is like take number 6 or something where I've started to try to discuss this and still haven't been able to get everything kind of like I wanted it to, kind of lined up in my head. You know, get about 2 minutes in and it's like, no, I don't like that. 3 minutes, stop, start over, you know. But the first thing is I had a hard time deciding whether or not to put this in the Christian specific segment or just put it in the regular part of the show. But the thing is, my Christian faith is, I mean, it's who I am. I mean, it is really a central part of who I am. And to go through what I've been going through and such a big deal in life and not wind up basically sounding like I'm preaching at some point or another is going to be pretty much impossible. And so I really figured the only way to really do this is to put it in the Christian specific segment of the show. And I just, it's a little bit hard, honestly, because it is a personal thing. I mean, I've shared it here with y'all, and I've done that intentionally because I do want anything I've learned, I want to share with y'all. You know, and that's, I guess, why I thought this was a good time to sit down and discuss it, because I have learned a lot. My faith perspective has changed. My perspective on life in a lot of ways has shifted and changed, and I've gained greater understanding. And what would be the point of that if I didn't share it with somebody else? You know, I mean, yes, I believe these lessons are for me personally, but at the same time, they apply to other people. Truth is truth. And it just wouldn't be right to sit here and just keep these things, these changes and these understandings I've come to, and just keep them to myself and not share them with y'all. I mean, if y'all can pick up something out of it, if y'all can get something out of it without having to go through, you know, a cancer diagnosis, then that's got to be a good thing. Now, as I go through some of this stuff, I want you to know it's completely random. Instead of like having a list and I'm going to sit here and go through the list, it's actually just kind of as it comes into my mind, we're going to discuss it. And then I write it down on my pad so I know that I've already discussed it. So there is no particular order. So don't be thinking like, well, the first thing is the most important thing. But no, this is it's like a shotgun. It's a completely random pattern. But I just, like I said before, I really want to share some of these things. And again, this lesson and this trial is basically, it's still ongoing for me, though I do see a light at the end of the tunnel, and I praise God for that. I guess the first thing is that death is a lot closer than what we think it is. We live our whole lives thinking that death is way off. That's the way we live our lives. That's the way we bear it. We tell ourselves, well, death is, yeah, I mean, we're all going to die someday. You know, someday is easy to deal with. When, you know, you're rocking along with your life and then somebody tells you you have a stage 4 melanoma, all of a sudden that you reel it in. Like if death is like a fish way out there on the end of your fishing line, you know, and it's out there and all of a sudden you reel it in and suddenly it's right here. You got it on the end of your hook and you're pulling it up. You know, it's like I remember sometimes if you were fishing in an old creek, and you thought you caught like something. You caught like a real heavy fish and you drag it up, but you got a big old alligator snapping turtle on the end of that line. You got to figure out, well, what do I do now? Well, now it's right here. Now I got this big old alligator snapping turtle staring at me. And you're going to cut that line, by the way. You ain't going to try to get you. You ain't even worried about no hook because you ain't going to get nowhere near that turtle. It's like that. Death is something that's way off. That's the way we live our lives. You know, because otherwise, how do you bear it? You know, it just becomes something that you would become paranoid about, you know, the fact that, you know, you could die at any minute and you can. Believe me, you can. So we always set death as something that's way off, that's going to happen someday, and we'll deal with it when it comes around. And I don't really think there's anything wrong, by the way, with that attitude, except that to understand that it's a lot closer than you think. If you're a young man and you're, say, 20 years old and, you know, you think, well, yeah, death in your mind is something that's going to happen when you're 80. It's way off from now. Trust me, 80 is way closer than what you think it is. This life is way shorter than what you think it is. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of people aren't going to make it to 80. I've known people that died at 20 and younger, much younger. It's way closer than we think. It could come knocking at any time. And while I don't think it serves us well to like obsess over it, like, you know, to be constantly worried, you know, like, I don't know, paranoid, I guess, it is something to be mindful of in the way we live our lives. Because we tend to, like, too often, I think, to have this attitude of we'll get our affairs in order and we'll get our act together one of these days. But what if one of these days never comes? What if death knocks tomorrow? It can happen at any time. I think it's a perspective adjustment. Again, I don't think it warrants like obsessing about when you're going to die, but do understand you will. And as I've said before, it is the ultimate trial. It's like the final exam. I've always, for some time, I've looked at this life as the whole thing is like, it's like going through school. And at some point you will graduate. And when you graduate, you have to take the final exam, and facing death is that final exam. Will your faith finally hold through the ultimate trial, which is understanding that now is the time that all of this is drawing near? Or will you cast it all to the wind, fall apart, and blow away like leaves, like a pile of leaves with a big old dust devil blowing through them, and it just scatters? You gathered up your faith your whole life. You thought you gathered it, but there was no weight to it. There was no substance to it. It was just a pile of leaves. And then when it came time that, you know, as long as you were looking at his death is off someday, I'll deal with that someday. You were raking up what you thought was your faith, and you got a big pile of it, but wound up there was nothing to it. It was light. It was just leaves. And then a big gust of wind come through and scattered it. When the day came and it's like, you know what? Death could be within the next 6 months. Whoosh, your face scattered. Your leaves, you scattered like leaves, all blown away. Now, you want to have weight and substance to your faith so that when you do face the final exam, that you're actually ready for that and understand that it will come about. Temptation, whether it's resisting temptation to sin or temptation to doubt or temptation to, you know, not put our faith in God, whatever the case may be. As Christian believers, we deal with temptation. And I think a lot of times as Christian believers in our struggles against things that we're tempted with or struggle with in this life, we tend to beat ourselves up. I do. I think Christian believers, you're listening to this, there's probably something you're dealing with, and you've been probably dealing with it your whole life. Because see, I believe that this is how people's lives are structured in this struggle. I believe that you've got like all of these different things that you have to deal with, all these different levels, like, you know, struggles, things that you struggle with. And most of them are small, and you struggle with them and you overcome them, and then something else comes along, you struggle with that and you overcome that. But I kind of believe that people are all given like one big thing that is like their lifelong project. Again, like if you were in a school, you're going to have all these different small projects, but let's say you have like a thesis or something, you know, like you're working on your PhD and you have a thesis, a theme. You know, I think that everybody has one big thing that is their thing that they are assigned to struggle with. This is their assignment. And of course, everybody thinks the thing that they're dealing with is the hardest because it is for you. You know, you look at the other guy and you're like, well, for starters, you tend to look at most people and you have no idea what the thing is for them. You know, that's a private deal. They don't share that. So you tend to look around at other people and it's like, man, I'm the only one struggling with this one big thing. You know, I'm the only, you're not. Everybody, I believe everybody has a thing. Somebody you may look, there ain't no perfect people. You look over there at your neighbors and you think, boy, they've got their act together. I wish I had my act together. No, they don't. Everybody gets a big thing that they more or less spend their entire life struggling against. I do. I believe that. And again, it's not necessary for you to know what other people's is. That's not your business. But I do believe everybody gets at least they get that one thing. You got all the other little things you deal with. I believe everybody gets one, you know, thing. Like, I mean, for instance, an alcoholic, you know, alcohol, that's the, yes, they have other sin and temptation that they deal with. But the temptation for alcoholism, you know, for alcoholism, is that's their one thing that more or less they spend their entire life wrestling with and struggling with. Here's the thing. you aren't, I think as Christian believers, because of this, we tend to beat ourselves up. We tend to beat ourselves up because you struggle with things and you try to live an upright life. And of course, you're faulty. You're trying to swim with weight on your foot. You're trying to run a marathon with a concrete block chained to you, you know, or a row of tires or whatever. This life, this physical being, this temporal realm is dragging you down. And I think as Christian believers, we tend to beat ourselves up. And I think one of the things that's important to understand and one of the things that you need to adjust your perspective on is to understand that you're not tempted or you're not struggling with anything that isn't common to man. You're not special. Well, I'm so special. No, you're not. Oh yeah, I'm so special. I have to struggle. God has given me this thing I'm struggling with, and it's such a, oh my gosh. No, you ain't the only one struggling with that. There are lots of people struggling with the same thing. Worse yet, there's people who don't bother struggling. They just embrace it, wallow around in sin. The fact that you're struggling with it is actually a blessing. It shows that you're still on the right path. You haven't surrendered to it. But understand, anything you are tempted with in your life, anything you are struggling with, you're not struggling with anything but that which is common to man. It's just, you're not the only one. It's actually real common. You're not special. I'm sorry. I'm sorry or congratulations. It just depends on how you want to look at it. But it's just, you're not extra good. You're not extra awful. You're just dealing with stuff that everybody else is dealing with. Just praise God that you're choosing to deal with it. You know, that you are engaged in the struggle and that you haven't surrendered yourself over to it. The vast majority of the things we spend so much time worrying about in this life is bullshit. I'll say it again. Over 90% of what you worry about in your life is bullshit. Even things you think are a big deal, because we tend to blow things up and think they're a bigger deal than what they are. Oh my gosh, I've got too many bills. I've got too many bills. How am I going to pay these bills? Laying awake at night, giving yourselves ulcers, making yourself sick. If you're going to die next week, do you give a shit about those bills then? No, I mean, really, because I do. I've known so many people in my life that literally they made themselves sick worrying about like things like bills. They gave themselves ulcers and they really, their health deteriorated because they had so many bills and they were struggling, you know, and trying to keep their business afloat or whatever the case may be. And they made themselves sick. They literally made themselves physically ill worrying about things. And you know what? It's bullshit. If you die, when you die, and if that was tomorrow, do you give a shit about those bills then? What will happen? What will happen if you're worried about something like, say, how many bills you got? How are you going to pay these bills? I want you to close your eyes for a minute and imagine that you die tonight. Now, what happens to those bills? Well, then more than likely, the bank or whoever you owe these bills to is going to just eat it. Huh? And that's the end of it. They have to enter a ledger thing that says, oh, this is a loss. We can't collect it. He's dead now. And that's the end of it. And they'll go right on. They'll go right on doing their thing. It won't even be a bump in the road. And yet you waste your life. You spend this time wasting your life, making yourself physically ill, worrying about paying the bank or whoever you owe, because that way they don't have to put that entry into their ledger and then keep on trucking and forget about you within seconds. That's how important that shit is. It's bullshit. We spend all of this time worried about stuff. We're just obsessing over stuff. And most of it is absolute bullshit. You're wasting your life. You're wasting your life worrying about silly bullshit. Those bills, they write them off. That'll be that. That'll be the end of it. It won't matter. It won't matter when you're dead. So why do we make them matter so much when we're alive, to the point where we make ourselves physically ill over these things? It doesn't even make any sense, does it? Because those things aren't important. I mean, really. But yeah, I got to pay my bills, Dan. I got to pay my bills. Well, if you can, then you can't, but you don't got to. I mean, what are they going to do? Come take your stuff and that'll be the end of it. They can't come take your life. Perspective. It all got to be perspective. We get so tangled up, I think, in these things that we lose all our perspective. We don't understand. And we build these things up into being so important. You know, it's so important. But is it? Is it really? What happens if this is so important? If this is such a thing, whatever it is, that you're laying awake at night, you can't sleep, and you have to take pills to go to sleep and pills to wake up, and you're a nervous wreck, and you're snapping at the people around you because you're constantly stressed out, and you just what happens if you're not here tomorrow? That's a good exercise. Really, I think that's an excellent exercise because it doesn't matter. So it won't be my problem. I'll be dead. Exactly. So why is it really that big of a problem for you now? If you can do it and you need to do it, then great. But if not, then what do you care? Perspective. Oh, perspective. Who do you owe loyalty to? Who do you owe loyalty to? Our society, for working people especially, our society is structured to give you this mentality that you like owe loyalty to your employers. You do. Yeah. Oh, I mean, you do. You look at the whole thing, you know, like, for instance, here in the U.S., I mean, this show has a worldwide audience. So I always have to point out that this is a U.S. thing. Here in the U.S., it is a customary thing. It is driven into people's minds from a young age. If you quit a job, you have to give a 2-week notice. You owe your employer. You see, they gave you the privilege of hiring. They went out on a limb and hired you. You owe them a 2-week notice. They hired you and gave you this job. They gave you this job. You owe them a 2-week notice. False loyalty. People get this mindset, like you owe the people that you, whoever you work for, you owe them this loyalty. You owe them. You've got this debt to them. Once again, it's bullshit. No, you don't. If they decide that they're better off without you, you ain't getting no 2-week notice. In 2 weeks, you're fired. Trust me, I know. In 2 weeks, you're fired. We're going to have to let you go in 2 weeks. We're giving you this 2 weeks. We'll pay you for the next 2 weeks so that you'll have a chance to go get another job. Because that's what they tell you. You got to give a 2-week notice. That way your employer has, you know, a couple of weeks to try to find a replacement for you. Funny, it never works the other way. See, loyalty is a 2-way street. Your loyalty to those who are loyal to you. That's when I quit caring anything about Donald Trump after January 6th. You have all these people that are trying to be loyal and support the guy. And then, when it's unhandy for him, he throws him under the bus. You know, throws nothing. Loyalty is always a 2-way street. And let me tell you, they ain't going to give you 2 weeks to go find a job. We're going to have to cut you loose. But we'll pay you for the next 2 weeks. That way you'll have a chance to go find another job. Because we care about you and we owe it to you. You've worked for us and we've turned a profit off of your back, off of your sweat and labor. The company has turned a profit off of that for 10 years now. We at least owe you 2 weeks worth of wages so you can go find another job. No, they just cut your ass loose. They call you in and say you're fired. Get your shit and get out. That's the way it works. And yet, what do we tell? You owe loyalty to you. No, you don't. What you owe to your employer is an honest day's labor. You agreed to X amount an hour, or if you're on salary, X amount per month to do this labor. And you want to fulfill that labor. One of the Christian teachings is to be fair to people, and that includes you. Don't cheat anybody. This is what basically a biblical definition of love is. You don't cheat people. You treat people fairly, and guess what? You are people. It is not a Christian thing to cheat yourself so that you give other people, you know, cheat yourself. That's not. You're still cheating somebody. You owe it to your employer to put an honest day's work in. As long as you've done that, and they owe it to you to pay you for your honest labor. That's where it ends. That is where any loyalty, either direction, ends. They owe it to you to pay you the amount agreed upon. You owe it to them to do the work that you agreed to do. That's where the loyalty ends. There is no loyalty beyond that. If you have fulfilled that obligation, then you owe them zero, zilch, nada. Now, I'm using employers and employee relationship as you know, an example, because that's the easiest one. But the honest fact of the matter is, you really want to, I think it's important to really step back sometimes and reevaluate. I mean, who exactly do you owe loyalty to? Because people will try, let me tell you, people will try to suck you in to making you feel like you owe them something, when in reality you don't, because they get something out of that. It's kind of like the way that, well, it's not exactly, but you know, it's one of the things I've learned in life is that people will almost, I mean, just so reliably, people will so often try to make their problems into your problems. You know, you have somebody in your life and they'll be telling you about something. You're like, oh, yeah, you know. And you think at first, see, you think that you know, you're just lending them an ear, you know, a shoulder to lean on. But you watch. And after a little bit, the next thing you know, they keep inching it in. And before long, they dump it off on you. And they turn their problems into being your problem. Now all of a sudden you're stressed out about it. And it was their problem. They turned that into your problem. People will. They'll try to turn their problems into your problems. And when that happens, it gives you like this, well, I have to figure this out because, you know, I owe it to them. No, you don't. That is their problem. You gave them advice they needed or even helped them. And then that's fine. You know, you helped them if you were able to help them. But as far as letting them then unload it and suddenly be looking at you like, well, have you figured out the answer to this yet? Well, no, that's your problem. Well, I did what I could for you. I listened to you and you know, I even gave you this support or whatever. I gave you this advice or, you know, I loaned you this wrench to fix the problem, whatever the case may be. You know, I did what I could for you, but dude, at the end of the day, it's still your problem. But next thing you know, it's they've tried to make it into your own problem. You know, they've offloaded it to you. And it's like, no, bruh, that's your problem. You know, quit trying to make it my problem. People will do that. And this is, again, an extension of the misplaced loyalty. Because you'll get sucked into thinking like now all of a sudden when they've successfully offloaded their problems and made you internalize them into becoming your problems and they're not dealing with it anymore. They're sitting around tapping their foot waiting for you to figure it out for them. You're doing it. You're doing it. Why? Because something inside of you has this misplaced loyalty. Well, I owe it to this guy. I got to figure this out for him. I got to do this for them. No, you don't. That's their problem. It's not your problem. You did what you could. You know, you tried to be nice. You did what you could. But at the end of the day, it's still their problem. They've got to figure it out. Got to keep your loyalties where they belong. Got to keep your loyalties where they belong. Got to keep everything lined up. You got to keep everything in its proper perspective. Prayer. Prayer is Christian believers. Prayer is very much a part of our daily lives. It should be. Hopefully it is for you. When we pray, we spend entirely too much time talking and not enough time listening. And what I mean by, no, I don't mean you're going to hear a voice booming down from the sky talking to you back, and yet you should be sitting around waiting for that. You should be spending time listening in your heart. We tend to fall into this thing, and we're warned against it in the Bible. You know, to wind up our prayers are like the heathen, where we think our many words, we just don't shut up. We just babble, 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 babble. And we think if we say enough things, then God will finally hear us. We just got to keep praying, just blah, 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 blah. And at some point in time, God will be like, okay, fine, if you'll shut up, I will do whatever it is you're asking me to do. And it's always asking. Why do we always say we got to be asking? We got to be asking God for something 24/7. And we never think about what that looks like from God's perspective. Imagine if you had a child that never shut up about just wanting, buy me this, buy me that. Take me here, take me there, do this for me, do that for me. Dude, it would just wear you out. You might love them as a parent, but you'd be like, man, this kid needs to shut the hell up. babble, babble. We just talk, 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 and don't spend nearly enough time listening. We pray. Yes, we pray constantly. You know what? You can pray and shut your lips. And don't get me wrong. It's important to pray and speak the things you're praying. But if you don't really have anything you even know, you're just saying the same words. You get in this rut and like, yo, I'm going to pray. And you realize that, you know, every time you pray, you're just mumbling the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. It means nothing. Shut up. Close your mouth. But keep the prayer. I mean, keep the prayer going. Just don't let yourself talk. Just try to internalize in your heart what it is you're trying to convey to God. Because the words obviously aren't doing it. If they were, then you could speak them and they would be spoken. And you conveyed what you were trying to. Obviously, you're unable to convey what you're trying to do. That's why you keep rambling the same thing over and over again. Shut your mouth and internalize it. And just try to just if you could transmit what it is you're feeling inside, what it is you're trying to convey to God that you can't put into words without opening your mouth. Try to do that. I always say that, you know, the thing important to remember when you're praying is that you're not going to convince God of anything. He doesn't already know. You're not going to change his mind. He's going to do what he's going to do. You're not going to talk him out of it or talk him into something else. You're not going to manipulate him. You're not going to trick him. You're not going to. He already knows this stuff. I mean, the prayer is really for your own benefit. We need to spend more time listening. And that means you can't be listening if you're talking, right? You say, I pray, and then God never answers my prayer. I don't get nothing out of that. Try shutting up. Maybe the problem is God can't get a word in edgewise. And again, no, I'm not telling you're going to look outside and a bush is on fire and you go out there and you hear this thundering voice. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying if you keep your mouth shut, internalize that in your prayer and try to really convey what you're spiritually feeling, you might find an answer in your heart. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, wait. I didn't realize. Didn't have to have a thundering voice. Because remember what we covered earlier, the vast majority of what we're worried about, so in other words, the vast majority of what you're probably praying about is bullshit anyway. It doesn't warrant, you don't warrant a burning bush, thundering voice tear, you know, Paul walking down the road and a blinding light tear encounter. You don't warrant that because more than likely what you're bothering God about is petty bullshit. I mean, it's a big deal to you. Sure. But it's really not that important in the big scheme of things. I'm sorry, I hate to break it to you. It's how life is. Close your mouth. Try to convey to God with your heart. And listen. Listen. And maybe you'll actually find an answer. As Christian believers, we try to live our lives learning and understanding. That's what following God means. We follow the Lord. We follow Jesus, and in doing so, we learn, and we gain understanding and knowledge. We gain spiritual maturity. That's what we're aiming for. That is the essential part as we live our lives. And, of course, we have to support ourselves. We have to find a way to work. We don't want to be slothful. We got to figure out a way to make a living and to try to get by. And there's things you have to do in life that you don't like, you don't feel like doing. That's a reality of life. But on the other hand, live your life like you want to. Live your life like you want to. If you're a young man, you don't want to wake up one day and all those years are gone and you look back and it's like, what did I do all those years? I didn't do anything that I wanted to do. I just spent all this time doing this. Kind of falls back on some things we've already discussed. If you spend your life letting other people turn their problems into your problems, just spend your whole life, because there's always going to be people that do that. I cannot tell you how many times. It's like a pattern. You know, this isn't like only a few people do that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say most people do that. If you don't get wise to that, you'll look back on your life and all these years went by and you spent your life running around basically trying to fix other people's problems for them. You spent your life running around not doing what you wanted to do because you had this misplaced sense of loyalty that you were supposed to be doing this stuff for these other guys. They got what they want. You didn't get what you want. Now, the devil tries to... Now, here's an important thing to understand. Because Satan's lies and temptation is he tells people that living life like you want to means sin. And that's freedom. And that's a lie. Because sin is enslavement. It enslaves you. It is a lie. It's a murderous lie. Understand that. There's nothing wrong with having freedom. Christ said he's bringing you freedom. Jesus brings you freedom. Live your life like you want to. Yes, we're following the Lord. Yes, we're trying to gain knowledge and understanding of him. Yes, we have to figure out some way to keep the lights turned on and food on the table and to meet our daily necessities. And sometimes that's going to involve doing things you really don't feel like doing. But by and large, live your life like you want to. If you're looking at your life right now, it's like, I hate the way I live. What the hell am I doing? I hate living like this. What is the point of this? What have I been doing my whole life? This life is a trial. This life is a learning, growing experience. The whole point of it is that we grow spiritually and understand God, that we're spiritually mature when we enter the kingdom of God. But it is a gift. You get one round in this thing, and you're supposed to do the most with it that you can. You're supposed to do the most with it. Live like you want to live. If you're not living the way you want to live, then figure out how you do want to live and do that. I mean, just live like, because you only get this one life. Yeah, but people might think, who gives a shit? This is your life. This is your one time around. Who cares what other people demand, expect, want you to do for them? It's your life. If you don't like the way you're living it, and here's something that you got to understand too, is your life. If you look around and it's like, man, I hate my life. It isn't God's fault. It isn't anybody else's fault. Your life, by and large, as you look at it as a whole, if you say, look around and say, I hate my life. Well, guess what? Your life is what it is as it is a result of the accumulated decisions that you have made. It's so tempting to externalize that. It's God's fault. It's this person's fault. It's that person's fault. It's the whole world's fault. Your life is a reason. You know why? It can't be the world's fault because everybody else is living in the world too. And if other people are living in the world and they're not miserable with their lives, then the problem isn't the world. The problem is you. Now, don't get me wrong. The world gives you problems. We know this is a fallen world, so on and so forth. I'm talking about your life. The summary of what your life consists of. I hate everything about my life. Your life is a result of the accumulated decisions you've made over it, good, bad, in between. If you don't like the way your life is, guess what? You need to make some different decisions. I don't know how many times I've heard people, I've sat around and listened to people bitch and piss and moan about their lives. On and on. And then when you say, okay, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do something different? Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do anything. I can't do anything different. Well, then your life's not going to change. Why are you bitching to me about it? Your life, I'm like a broken record because I'm trying to drive the point home. If you don't like your life is a result of the decisions you have made. If you want to do something different, then do something different. You're going to have to make different decisions. As long as you continue to get up every single day and do the exact same thing over and over, you're going to keep getting the exact same results over and over again. This isn't rocket science, but it's hard to see. It's hard to understand when you're sucked up into the middle of it. I get that. When you are in the midst of it and you're just doing the same thing like a robot, you're not even thinking about it. You're just going around. I was actually moving like a robot right there. Of course, you can't see that. But I had to tell you, you're just going through this routine every day. And then you wait. And then you keep looking around going, I hate my life. Get up. Do the exact same thing over and over again. I hate my life. Get up. Do the exact same thing. Do over and over again. I hate my life. Stop. If you hate your life, then do something different with your life. It's that simple. Well, it's not that simple. I don't know what to do. Well, figure something. Then do anything different. Just break free. Do something different. Your life is the result of the accumulated decisions you have made, by and large. You decided to do these things. Now, my life sucks because of my wife. Who decided to marry her? That's right. You did. It's a result of the accumulated. Can't put that off on anybody else. If you want your life to be different, you're going to have to live different. You got to do something. Do something different. We don't spend nearly enough time being thankful. We don't spend nearly enough time being thankful. This kind of circles back to the prayer thing we were talking about just a few minutes ago. It occurs to me that myself, I tend to, in my prayers, always be asking for something. We don't spend nearly enough time being thankful for something. And I thought about this the other day. As again, I basically have had, like, I mean, the doctor doesn't, they just can't accept that I had this tumor this bad and they're not finding cancer anywhere else. I mean, it's like they can't accept it. Well, we're going to run more tests. Well, you've already said that this has come back negative. This has come back, you know, it's not in the lymph node and you're not finding any sign of it around the area after you cut it out. I mean, but basically they're like, we can't accept this. Your tumor was this bad. You got to have something somewhere else. And it occurred to me the other day, and again, I'm going to personalize this to make the point. It occurred to me that the other day I spent a little time in prayers. I try to spend time in prayer every day. I spent a little time in prayer, and it wasn't much. And it dawned on me, I asked myself, I thought, you know, if I had the opposite diagnosis, they did the surgery, ran the tests, and they said, Dan, you got cancer in every part of your body. You better start figuring out what you're going to do. We can chemo bomb you and you might get an extra month or two. But other than that, what would I be doing right now? Because I would bet that I would probably be spending a lot of time with God, heal me, please, God. And yet I get basically a healing blessing outcome from this. How much time have I spent actually praising and thanking God for that? Is it equal to the amount of time that I would spend begging him to heal me? And I'm ashamed to say the answer is no. It hasn't been equal. It hasn't been anywhere close to that. This applies too often in our lives. When things aren't going the way we want them to, we want God to bless us. Oh, God, do a miracle in my life. God, do this. God, do that. But when we do get something, when things do work out, when we do get blessed, thank you, Lord. I'll get back with you the next time I need something. That tends to be how we do as Christian believers all too often. It tends to be how we do. Again, it's one of those things, you put yourself in God's shoes. You know, if you had a child that acted that way, how would you feel? I mean, you would still love them, but you'd be disappointed. You'd feel like they really don't appreciate what you're trying to do for them here. They're just trying to use you or something. You know, it's just, we got to be thankful. You know, we get caught up in the bullshit, the stuff that we think matters, it doesn't. I was on the way to the doctor and the thing, I know you go down through and we live in this society and there's people living in tents now on the side of the road, under bridges, tents, people living in tents and the weather coming in, it's getting cold. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know a lot of them people are there because they got all these mental issues, they're drug addicts, so on and so forth. I get that, but still, we live in a society where there's people in freezing temperatures living in a tent under a bridge. A lot of people would look down on me the way I live. People have a nice house and you know, high paying job, and they'd look at me and they'd say, "Well, look at that guy. He just trash compared to me. He live in quality pre-manufactured housing and doesn't have a nice car like I got." You know what? I got a house. I'm not living in a tent under a bridge. And you can look down your nose at me all you want to, but you know what? I praise God and thank God for what I do have. I've got shelter. I've got food. I'm certainly not hungry. I'm not cold and I'm not freezing. And I am thankful for all I have been blessed with. And that needs, I think, to be our attitude and our focus more than what it is. I should say more than what it too often is in our lives. We'll probably get into some more. I mean, I could just go on and on, but we're going to get way long here. We're going to get way long the show. So we're going to wrap it up on that note. And I hope you got something out of it. You know, like I said, I've been wanting to share. I knew I was going to share some of this stuff with you. And I just, again, my Christian faith is such a central part of who I am that I knew it would be preachy. And, you know, there's no way to do this without it being intermingled with that. So that's why we covered it here in the Christian specific segment this week. So hopefully you got something out of it. Hopefully you can take some of these lessons and apply them to you and shift and change and understand. Like I said, we'll probably get into more of this as we go. I just, for time's sake, we got to stop there. So once again, thank you. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I do appreciate your financial support. It means a lot to me to know that you're getting something out of the show as well. So we're going to get on out of here. And again, I'm doing temporarily doing kind of a midweek extra bonus, like a Daily Nationalist type of thing, just because I've been so bored and we have the time, you know. So, and of course, I'm on Fridays with Sven Longshanks for the regular edition of the Daily Nationalist, aka Clown World in Review. So be sure and catch those as well. And be sure and catch us back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.